I've consumed Birdemic.
Wow.
That sounded gross, and we're recording. Ladies and gentlemen, buckle up for the sex. It's the Apropos of Nothing podcast.
With your hosts,
Salsa,
James,
and Jenna.
And we have a special guest.
That's me, Tim.
Yay!
You didn't tell me what I was supposed to say, but I was guessing that's what I was supposed to say.
We thought you'd get it out of context.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Context clues. Anyway, let's just get right into it. I am drinking some Glenmorangie.
Oh, okay. Oh, all right.
Speyside single malt scotch whiskey, because, yeah.
Because you have it, and so why not? I made a cocktail mix. It is a green apple cider, the Angry Archer that I typically drink.
Mm-hmm.
So Joe's roommate moved out and left a bunch of booze because they worked at a booze store, mm-hmm. and just had random booze and just left it. So I'm going to start going through the left booze. The left booze. The left one's always a little bigger. And
definitely stay away from the alt-right booze.
Definitely. But the booze that I found to mix with my green apple was pomegranate liqueur.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
I was trying to think of a Persephone or Eve-based name, maybe Fallen Ladies, something like that. But let me taste it and see if that's even worth having a name. Oh, that's lovely.
Well, all right.
I have two different types of tart going on.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
Yeah, and the pomegranate tart is a smoother tart.
Two different mm-hmm. types of tart is an amazing Led Zeppelin album name.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's your medieval, all medieval instruments Led Zeppelin cover band.
There you go.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah. There's the sweetness of the green apple one with the mm-hmm. smoothness of the pomegranate, and yeah, this is really good. So it needs a name.
All right.
Why isn't the name two different kinds of tart?
It's kind of long, but not impossible.
Ooh, the two tarts.
If you want to go
the queen of tarts.
If you wanted to go with a super inside name, you could call it the Led Zeppelin.
No, I think if you do the two tarts, Eve and Persephone.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the two tarts.
Yeah.
I like it. Yeah. And only I will know why, or anybody that listens to this podcast, whatever.
James, are you consuming an adult beverage?
I am, as a matter of fact, because I just got done with physical therapy, so...
Yay!
This is a gin and tonic.
Oh.
And of which I am increasingly a fan, especially after physical therapy.
Mm. Refreshing.
I never understand the desire for a gin and tonic.
It's refreshing.
It's made of two things I don't like.
Also, he is not going to get malaria while working out.
Well, for me, the tonic is really good for avoiding muscle cramping, and and the gin obviously helps to keep you from having muscles at all. If you have enough of it,
right.
You just
like it's there to
become
help
a liquid. Yeah.
Tim, I'm guessing the answer is no, but do you have a drink?
No, I do not have a drink.
That's okay.
A bottle of water somewhere. But
it's quite all right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's probably the smartest decision out of the four
probably.
Of us.
Probably.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's actually a grown-up beverage.
having guessed it on your podcast before, but I think it's been well over a year, you would think that your regular listeners, however dozen of them there are, would know that I don't drink. So.
Hey, I think we're up to two dozen now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well... James, what you been up to?
Yes. Many things.
You want to talk about our shared experience earlier today?
Yes. I'm going to talk about three shared experiences very quickly. The first was that the wonderful and talented Tom St. Asked if I would join them in a remote viewing of the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Because they had set up a Rocky Horror fun viewing time with a friend of theirs, and they needed at least a third person who could shout the usual filthiness at the screen.
Right.
And we did have the same kind of sync up issues that, you know, for example, musicians have over the internet medium, but it was as close as we could possibly make it. We were all watching synced copies in different from different services or media. I had purchased mine on Amazon. Tom had theirs from Hulu, and where it is available for streaming for free if you already have a Hulu account. And then their friend had the DVD. So it was just, we all started it at the same time, got them as synced up as we possibly could, and then our shout-outs were just very slightly different, but it was pretty fucking close. And it was a wonderful experience. I wore a maid apron.
Nice.
So there was that. And then the night that followed that, I had set up a group viewing of my perennial favorite, Over the Garden Wall, which has been described as Steven Universe plus Grimm Fairy Tales, like Brothers Grimm. It is a mixture of many things, apparent polar opposites existing together. It is,
it's so cute and so creepy and so cute.
And the other thing is, it feels really familiar and, you know, and old and traditional, but it is something new and unique. It's been around for less than a decade. It's fantastic. I wholeheartedly recommend it. And then once that was done, and we got to... I guess expose would be the correct word. We exposed two people to it who had not... Three people.
Your story's falling apart, James.
Surprise cunning and an almost fanatical devotion to the Pope. And so when... So we were able to show friends of the podcast, Merritt and Dante, and then... we were also able to show not friend of the podcast, Eric Thompson. First the French. Yeah, so that worked out. And then, you know, many other people, several Boothies and other friends joined in. All told, it was, I think, a dozen people plus myself, including...
We got up to 16, actually.
Oh, wow. A few people were also seated together, too. So... So there's that. And then...
I'm 16 and a half, because Jessa was kind of in and out.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, 16 and a half, going on 17. So the... that was last night. And then today's shared adventure was in the real meat space.
Whoa.
After being incredibly productive all day, I got up at 4:30 this morning and just started cleaning stuff and making breakfast and... going about the day, because that was the time that my body decided it was getting up.
I woke up at 5 for like half an hour, so I'm going to blame you for that.
That's fair. That seems right.
Yeah.
Jenna came by to pick up a desk that Bryn cannot fit in her room, and her legs do not fit under. And since Jenna is a slightly... smaller person in height-wise, it seems like a good... it seemed like it might be a good fit. So we squoze that into the back of Jenna's Honda and then adventured over to another place to drop it off.
It's currently existing in Joe's back room, which I'm calling the studio.
Giggity?
Yeah. But living there, it means when I'm over at Joe's, I can do things, not podcasting tonight because I don't have the appropriate Ethernet connector, but in the future, podcasting and work from home type stuff when I'm over at Joe's. Mm-hmm. And not be underfoot when he's trying to vacuum.
I'm having a little bit of trouble here, just for a moment, trying to figure out how small this desk must be, because Bryn is not that much taller than Jenna, as I recall.
She's a couple inches taller, but it's more about the this kind of space.
It's also... how this space is applicated.
Audio. What are we doing here? Are we doing...
It's visual jokes on an audio podcast. It's how we work.
Are you saying it has more depth, Jenna?
We're going to have way more depth than me.
But, the main thing for Bryn is that a lot of her height is allocated in her legs. Mm. And so, even though she's only a few inches taller than Jenna, her legs... like especially her lower legs and things like her knees are constantly hitting the underside of the desk.
You're saying she has legs that don't end?
I mean, they go up.
They go as far as they need to.
They do go all the way up. Yeah, it's okay. Where they should be. Yeah,
Mine don't. It's really awkward.
Uh-huh. It's weird.
Just have a weird space
like Rayman
that you hover.
Where you just
yep. Yes.
Yeah, or Vector Man.
Or any number of references.
Right. So that was the shared adventure, and I got to hit my head once again on some of Joe's interior lighting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, congratulations on that.
Huh?
I said congratulations on that.
Yeah.
Joe is not that much taller than me. Because... Mm-hmm. He's not a tall man, and James is, so like Joe and I can walk around the place just fine. I don't know what kind of problems you're having there, James.
Well, the first thing that I do when I move into any place that has lighting that extends down from the ceiling is go and add a little carabiner or an extra clip. A little extra link in order to dramatically shorten the chain, because otherwise I guarantee I'm going to rail my noggin on that every time I go through that room and I'm not paying attention. I got to tell him about, you know, checking out an apartment in between the cities, and not only was it an awkward apartment, it was huge. It had an enormous amount of floor space, but some of the ceilings were cut because it was the upper floor, and all of the doorways were about 5.5 feet tall.
Perfect!
Right. And some of the lighting fixtures. And the shower head in the... Like, it had a gorgeous clawfoot tub, and... the shower head was perfect. It was one of those rain-type shower heads and everything like that. It was... It had settings and massage abilities and all of that crazy crap. And it was a, like, fun... very cool apartment, but between my room, what would have been the only bedroom, and the bathroom, there were no fewer than 3 doorways, all of them 5.5 feet tall. So if I got up to pee in the middle of the night, I would have to duck 6 times minimum.
And you'd probably fail at least once.
Right.
Every time.
I'm only laughing because that hasn't happened.
Yeah.
But the idea of...
I'm laughing because I'm picturing James whacking his noggin.
Yeah, that's fair.
I was just thinking about the fact that you would have had the cleanest belly button that you have ever had.
I was about to say, like, you would have been like, the nipples up.
Yeah.
Your nipples down.
Yeah, in the movie Lost in Translation, a lot of it is kind of, you know... dated. Possibly problematic. I'm not sure. I haven't asked. And I should. But one of the things that they did was to put the very tall Bill Murray into a shower at a Japanese hotel, and that, like, the pipe that the shower head came out at was at eye level for him. So in order to wash his hair, he had to awkwardly sort of hunch and, like, half squat under the shower head, which I identified with, and his feet stuck off the end of the bed, which, again, I identify. Like, this is all shit that is an everyday thing for me. So it that movie spoke to me. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
So I did not go with that apartment. I went with a different tiny apartment because it was tinier in a different way.
Is it adorable, then?
Yes. Yeah.
Is it very cute?
Yeah.
Cute, tiny apartment. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hilariously, when I moved into this place, Bryn asked if I was sure that I wanted the small room, and I had to, like, look at her for a second and be like, yeah. It's tiny. Of course I do.
I love how when our three cars are lined up, mine, Bryn's, and James's, the biggest person has the tiniest car, and the tiniest person has the biggest car. Bryn's like, am I normal? Am I?
None of us are normal.
Yeah, that's fair.
Fair.
What about you, Jenna? What have you been up to?
There's a desk in Joe's room now, so.
That's what I heard.
Yeah, rumor has it.
In the bathroom, yeah.
Really? Tell us the story of how it got.
Oh, my God.
So I'm driving to this asshole's house, and...
Yeah, there's that.
Hitting his head on everything.
No, so, I had, gone back to my place to stay at my place for a few days, because enough time had passed since I had seen a mouse, and I had spent enough time there, without seeing a mouse, that I was starting to feel comfortable in my old place again, right? Mm-hmm. And Joe and I are not ready to live together. That's just a thing. So, so I'm spending
a good thing to know about yourself.
Right. No, it's important to know where you're at in relationship mm-hmm. steps and where things are at. And that's just not a thing right now. I value the honesty in our relationship. I've been in a situation where I have lived with somebody that was not ready for it, and I do not want that again. Anyway, so I finally, like, spend a few nights at my place where I pay rent. And I'm like, okay, everything's cool. Everything's comfortable. Oh, Jesus, fuck, there's a mouse. I screamed like a 50s housewife. Actually, I screamed like I was being stabbed. Like, I screamed like a horror movie scream. Which is, I'm worried that our next door neighbors think that Jessa is doing something to me, or like my daughter's attacking me because of the way I scream every time I see a mouse. I've been spending the past couple nights at Joe's house again, trying to acclimate, trying to get comfortable with my place again. And he's been very patient and very kind. And poor Jessa is dealing with a mother that's like just high anxiety anytime she's in the same space as her, which can't be good for her either. And I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do, you guys. It's just that they live there now. Mice have taken over. So that's kind of been a big thing in my life. Joe and I finished Stargate SG-1.
Oh.
Yay!
We completed SG-1.
Mm-hmm.
We are now into the fourth season of Stargate Atlantis. I have watched, well, the very first thing we watched was the original movie, but I also got to watch the direct-to-DVD sci-fi movie.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, buddy. Joe prefaced it. And he was like, so there's some times in this movie where the like there's a scene in this movie where the blocking is very problematic. And I was like, okay. And he's like, and I know that you as a director are just going to key in on that and like get taken out of it. So just know that that's a thing and accept it and move on. And I'm like, okay, that's fair. I appreciate that. Thank you for the heads up. And so we get done with the movie and Joe's like, so what did you think of the blocking? And I was like, Joe, you told me there was one scene where the blocking was problematic. And I have issues with the blocking in many scenes. Let's be clear.
Maybe he was defining the entire movie as a single scene.
Mm-hmm. No, because, and here's the thing, is that the movie, the direct-to-DVD movie, not to spoil this for anybody who has not taken the opportunity to see it in the past 15 years. This glorious, beautiful tribute to sci-fi direct-to-DVD movies everywhere. But it was basically like watching a two-parter episode without the to be continued. It was basically that. There were storylines that did not need to be there. Like, it only made sense to have one of the storylines there if you were, like, one of those pushing-up-your-glasses nerds. She said to a podcast full of people wearing glasses that generally identify in the nerd area. But, to wrap up a thing that you may have gleaned off of the actual series, the storyline had no other purpose and it didn't even have much of a story. Like, it was just an event that happened that they pretended had story. It was awful. I was angry about that. and then they spent too much time on that one and not enough time on like the 15 other plots that they put into this goddamn thing. They were just like, okay, we're going to throw this monster in from the series and this monster in from the series this character in from this place and this character in from this place. And like, it was such a catastrophe.
It was just a grab bag of whatever.
More Hulk testicles means more iron.
Now, I will say, it made more sense than it had any right to make sense. It really did. Like, there were so many plot lines that were going all over the place, and it still somehow made enough sense to where I could follow everything. So bonus points there. But it was not smooth. It was not... The pacing was awkward. There were things that were, like, super action-packed explosions, and then there's a guy walking on top of the mountains for, like, 2 minutes. Not emoting, not just walking, like seriously just walking. Like, even in Lord of the Rings they had enough sense to just show about 30 seconds of it and not 2 fucking minutes, and then another minute later of just a guy walking along the mountaintops. That was it.
Reminds me of the
that at one point that was exciting. That's it. Like
the parking and walking scenes from Birdemic.
I don't remember.
See, I was more thinking the Hulk.
Sounds like that has more drama to it than what Jen watched.
Yeah, no.
Like, when I say it was just a dude walking in the mountains, like, he wasn't even climbing. He was just walking along the top of some mountains. Like, there was no struggle even in his walking. He was limping a little bit because he got hurt. But, they didn't show that struggle. They just showed a dude limping across the mountains along the top on a path. Like, he wasn't climbing anything. There was nothing to overcome during this long walk of mountain walk. It wasn't mountain climbing, which may have been more exciting. No, it was just a dude walking.
You know, Jenna, if you couldn't see the struggle, I think you're speaking from a place of privilege, and maybe...
I mean, it was a black guy walking.
Whoa.
I don't know if I'm making.
I've been doing anything else tonight.
They were white snow-capped mountains too. So that's really big.
It's a metaphor, Jenna. It's a metaphor.
Salsa, what is a metaphor?
It's a comparison of two things where you use the symbolism of one thing to describe the other thing, James.
I thought
have
it was
never taken an
cabbages.
English class.
What, Tim?
I said I thought it was for juicing cabbages.
Hmm.
Yeah.
A meta?
That's what I use a metaphor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have no. Okay.
I don't either.
Yeah, I got
just
lost.
Smile
I'm
and nod.
Having fun. one of our fans is really angry at us now, Salsa, because we didn't get it.
I mean, I don't care.
No.
He's made peace with that.
That's totally fair.
Yeah.
Anyway, the direct-to-DVD movie, I don't even remember what it's called, but it's the first. There is another Stargate, but there are three total Stargate movies, apparently. There's the original, which was very well done. Kind of cheesy, but still fun. Mm-hmm. There's the second one, which is a direct-to-DVD, and the third one is apparently also a direct-to-DVD. I haven't seen the third one. But the second second Stargate movie, highly recommend. Please enjoy with friends and snark.
I'm here for it.
All right.
My wife and I had our anniversary.
Aww.
Hooray!
We've been married 11 years now.
Jesus Christ.
Yep. What anniversary is 11?
11.
No, but I mean, what's the gift that you're supposed to get?
The one after 10.
The gift that I got her was a Switch. So
okay.
This is apparently...
Oh, it's the video game anniversary. Awesome.
Yeah. The cartridge anniversary, if you will.
We had our anniversary. We sent the kids to my wife's mother's house for the evening. And we got Buca di Beppo to go. And we watched a lot of Taskmaster.
Yes.
Because that is pretty much the perfect way to spend an anniversary.
I don't think I'm familiar with Taskmaster.
We have discussed it at length in the past, but Taskmaster is a British show. It was created originally by a comedian by the name of Alex Horn, who... Mm-hmm. Brought it to the Edinburgh Fringe, I believe, is where it started, and it was basically like just ridiculous tasks for people to do, and then it gets scored, and then they made a TV show out of it, and it's stars Greg Davies as the aforenamed Taskmaster, but then Alex Horn is the producer and task inventor. Mm. And he sets five comedians ridiculous tasks that they have to perform. And then they film it, and then they show the playback, and then Greg Davies, who has never seen these before, then scores them based on his own capricious whims. And it is hilarious. They will have like a whole bunch of ridiculous objects, and like a shopping cart on the other side of a stream, and they're like, put all of these ridiculous items into the shopping cart, fastest time wins, you know. And it's
nice.
Okay, that's, but you know, they can't carry all of them, and they're awkwardly shaped, and some are really heavy, and so they have to like, do they use the bridge that's, you know, 100 feet downstream, or do they just wade through the stream, or, you know, do they bring the shopping cart to the stuff, or do they make multiple trips, you know? And of course, in the moment, people are just grabbing stuff and trying to haul it over until that one smart person's like, what if I just bring this over here, you know? And so half of the time they're just looking for the loophole. And sometimes they're in the search for the loophole, they go to ridiculous lengths. And it has now been going on for 10 seasons, and they're just fucking brilliant. Yeah, just go on YouTube and search for Taskmaster, and
I will actually make a note. I'll set a reminder for myself, because I trust that you've talked about this before, and I just had it confused with perhaps a different show. So I'll
start with season one. Go through all the seasons, and they did season 1 through 7 is now on YouTube, and then they jumped to season 10, just straight. But the first episode of season 10 is not you're not allowed to watch it in this country, but episode 2 you are, and so, but whatever, we watched it. Taskmaster. Huh. Taskmaster, fucking great.
Is that because it shows scenes of our parliament?
What?
This is like a deeply inside baseball thing.
It probably is. So anyway, okay. We had our anniversary, okay. And the next day, this was on Friday, which is the day before our anniversary, but the day of our actual anniversary on Saturday, we spent no time together whatsoever, and we're happy about it. Like,
best anniversary.
It really was. Like,
sometimes that's the secret.
Like, my daughter had hockey practice, and so I took her to hockey practice, and then my wife took our son to go see his best friend in the world, and so she was, like, at their house, and I was at home, and I spent half the day, like, in front of the lathe, you know, turning out bowl blanks, which made me super happy, and my wife was with her friends, which made her super happy, and it was great. Hmm. Best anniversary ever. Because we're
enough.
At that age, we've been together long enough that what makes us happy is not necessarily having to be together. And that's okay.
I was going to make a mean comment and then didn't. You're welcome.
That's okay. Your anniversary gift.
Yay! So.
The 11th anniversary is the Jenna doesn't make fun of you anniversary.
Oh, just
Jenna bites your tongue anniversary.
There you go.
Once. Yes.
There we go.
Everybody gets
one.
My 11th anniversary was a very long time ago, so I'm sorry I missed out on that.
Ah, but did you get your wife a video game?
For our 11th anniversary?
Yes.
I'm going to say yes.
Because who's going to fact check you?
It was 19 years ago. I don't remember. She doesn't remember, so I'm saying yes.
Fair enough. 2001, that would have been, what, PS2 or maybe Xbox 360?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
Maybe like a computer game.
Yeah, it could have been a computer game.
2001 would probably have been the original Xbox still, but yes to the PS2.
PS2 was 2000.
Yeah. We had a PS2, so it could have been a PS2.
Ooh.
There you go.
It was Dance Dance Revolution. That's what it was. Boom.
Ooh, yeah. Boom. No, that's...
I got
wow.
Dance Dance Revolution
for our 11th anniversary. Solid.
Mm-hmm.
So you are aware, the traditional anniversary gift listed by apracticalwedding.com, the 11th year is steel.
Steel. There is
of course. Okay.
So I stole a video game console for my wife.
Did you get it at a bargain? Was it a steal?
Fell off the back of a truck.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
It was absconded by the Foot Clan.
Oh.
Feet.
What? The 6th year is candy.
What?
Which year is candy?
6.
Okay. I submit that every year is candy.
Right?
I mean, also that.
Well, when your anniversary is this close to Halloween, it should be.
First year is paper, then cotton, then leather. 4th year is fruit and flowers.
So, third year, leather.
Who waits for the 3rd year?
Well, you gotta get comfortable in the relationship and slowly, you know, bring those things in.
The fifth year?
I don't remember what any of the years are, but I do remember the first year is paper. And let me tell you why. Because Pat's grandparents were ridiculously cheap. And I don't have any problem saying this because they're both dead, so they won't hear about this. They were ridiculously cheap, and so for our first anniversary, what they got for us was a small like Target picture frame, 8x10, I believe, and inside that frame was a piece of paper that had a pineapple cut out of it. And it was something that they got in Hawaii that looked like beginner arts and crafts, like, you know, when you go to Hawaii and you go to an arts and crafts class in Hawaii and it's a paper cutting class. This is the thing that you have to do to prove that you can go to that class. They gave us this thing because it was the paper anniversary. So we got this pineapple cutout framed. So what we did with it was we took it and we wrote our names on the back of it, and then we gave it to our best friends at the time, who got married about a month after we did, for their first anniversary. That they needed to write their name on the back and pass it on to the next set of friends whose first anniversary it was. We know it went at least four more steps, and after that we have no knowledge, but it could still
be the sisterhood of the traveling pineapple.
The traveling paper pineapple first anniversary gift. That's how I know anniversary number one is paper. There you go.
Beautiful story, Tim.
That was some Slumdog Millionaire stuff right there.
You bet.
D'Artagnan.
Yeah, that was the Cliff Notes version of that film.
What do you say we take a break and then we can have more conversations with Tim?
I'm here for it.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
If you guys like what you heard, you can visit us on our website at aonpodcast.com. If you want to talk to us directly, you can send us an email at either Jenna, Salsa, or James at aonpodcast.com, or collectively at feedback@aonpodcast.com.
Oh, now I'm depressed.
And we're back. I'm Salsa.
James.
I'm Jenna.
I'm Jim.
Yay!
Good
contact
food. I'm learning.
Yeah, I learned it.
That's terrifying.
Hey, Tim.
Yes, hello.
What have you been up to?
Oh, I didn't know if I had to do that. I was actually kind of...
Well, if you don't want to, you don't have to.
I'll be happy to tell you. So this weekend I had an exciting... I mean, I've been up to a lot, but this weekend I had a very exciting adventure. I woke up on Saturday morning and I thought, my goodness, this house is cold. Now, I knew Saturday was going to be cold because the Dregs had originally... The Dregs is my band, for those listeners out there unaware.
Never heard of them.
You've been scheduled... I wasn't talking to you because I knew you knew what I was talking about. All right. Anyway, the Dregs were supposed to have a show on Saturday. We were going to be performing outdoors at Jaybird Winery in north of the Twin Cities. I would have found it. But the thing is, with the high... I don't go to a lot of places where there's booze. You understand that it's just not my thing.
Is your GPS also allergic to them? Or
what? I said I would have found it. I had the address. I just don't have it memorized. Okay? So we were supposed to do this show, but we were watching the weather forecast because this may come as a surprise, but if you're performing outside and it's cold, that's unpleasant. And playing instruments actually in the cold is really challenging. If you have to say, use your fingers to do fretting on a guitar or a violin, it's actually really difficult when the temperature gets down.
Trying to play guitar with cold hands it rips your fingers up real bad.
I can't even do it with warm hands.
Even doing it with like playing a boron, it's like, because your fingers are cold, it's harder to grip the tipper, and it just playing an instrument in cold weather is, now shut up, it's a tipper.
I had a lid on it. It was, everything was fine. The only three people who knew that I was losing my fucking mind were you three. But I was until you mentioned it.
We knew it was going to be cold. And basically it's like, if it was under 50 degrees, we knew we'd have to cancel. And we were watching the weather, and like the week prior, it looked like, the weather was supposed to be maybe mid 40s. And that was still kind of cold and probably didn't want to do it, but it would be the only fucking show we got to do in front of an audience this year. So there was that. It was outdoor and socially distanced and all that stuff.
Right.
But anyway, we were like, well, maybe we'll do it. And then the temperature just kept dropping. And by Thursday, the high was predicted to be 30. And we were like, okay, well, no, that's just not going to happen. So I knew it was going to be cold, is the point I'm trying to make. That I knew it was going to be cold on Saturday because we've been watching the weather for quite some time. But I woke up and I thought, the house is quite cold. That doesn't seem right. And I went down to look at my thermostat, which is set for 68 degrees and normally would not be on in October, but here we are. And I looked at the temperature in the house and it said it was 61. And I thought, well, that's not really where it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. So I went down to take a look at the furnace and see what was going on. And I imply by this that I know anything about the furnace. What I did know was that it was making zero noise, which it's supposed to make noise. And I thought, well, perhaps we are just in the low ebb of the thermostat. The thermostat is about to kick back in. I will wait a half an hour and see if the furnace either A, kicks back in, or if we lose another degree. And if we lose another degree, then I feel we are in what would not at that point be hot water. It would be rapidly cooling water. But
I get it.
So half hour later, the temperature indeed had gone down to 60 degrees, at which point my eldest son, who is now 21 years old and very, very smart, came downstairs and suggested to me that it was awfully cold in the house. And maybe the furnace wasn't working.
Question.
Yeah. Yes, what's your question,
Salsa? You consider 60 degrees awfully cold?
I have the same. Salsa and I are.
I'm going to say, I would say 60 degrees is awfully cold if what you're expecting is 68.
Yes.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah. So, anyway, shut up. Okay. So. So
I can agree to that.
I don't think the furnace is working. And I helpfully said, so what are you going to do about it? And he looked at me like I was insane and said that maybe I should call someone. So I went and checked the furnace again. It wasn't on. And I thought, okay, well, first things, I have a set of things that I can check, right? So the first thing I did is I went and checked to see if perhaps the breaker that the furnace is on had gotten tripped somehow, and it had not. And then I did what very helpfully is written on the side of the furnace when we had it installed. There's written on the with Sharpie on the side of the furnace, if the furnace stops working, there's a toggle switch, and you're supposed to flip the toggle switch to off, leave it off for a minute, and then turn it back on again. So I knew that the first thing to do, even with a furnace, is to turn it off and turn it back on again.
There we are.
And indeed, I turned the furnace off and turned it back on again. And there was a sickly buzzing noise that lasted for about 30 seconds, and that was it. So I did the only thing that I knew how to do in a circumstance like that. I turned it off and turned it back on again, to see if anything different happened. It did not. So then it became time for me to call the heating and cooling company that comes out to clean our furnace once a year. And I'll remind you, it was Saturday morning. So I called them up and I said, hey, my furnace isn't working. And they said, well, we can send somebody out on a Saturday if it's an emergency. Is it an emergency? And I said, well, the high's not supposed to go above 30 for the next 2 days. When's the earliest somebody could get here on a call that's not an emergency call? Monday, they said. Well, then I guess it's an emergency. So, anyway, $540 later, my furnace worked. That's the whole story. Which it was the guy came over. I described to him what happened. He said, okay, he went downstairs. Apparently on his after I told him what happened, he basically knew exactly what was wrong. Went down, turned the furnace off, turned it back on again, was like, oh, yeah, it's the exhaust fan. Went out to his truck where he had a new exhaust fan, installed the exhaust fan, and we were done. Took him maybe 20 minutes. And so he knew what he was doing. That was my weekend, because after that, doing anything that costed money was pretty much out. Because now we had a warm house, and I paid for it, goddammit, and we were going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
So that's what I've been doing. That's one of the things I've been, one of the many things I've been doing is getting my furnace fixed by paying somebody else to fix my furnace.
I am glad that you paid the $540 to have your furnace fixed instead of the like $5,400 to clean up a water spill when a pipe froze and broke.
Right.
Yeah. There was that
consideration of we have a gas fireplace, right? And a gas fireplace puts out a fair amount of heat.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
On the floor, it's on.
Yes.
So
we could
turn the gas fireplace on, and the main floor would probably have been plenty toasty. And maybe if we put fans at the top of the stairs and to the basement, the bottom of the stairs, to the upstairs, we would have gotten the rest of the house to somewhere in the 50s, maybe. I don't know. But, you know, it was going to be below freezing for 2 days, and do I want to run the risk of a pipe bursting? And I felt like that probably constituted an emergency.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
And I guess I'm glad it happened now rather than in the middle of January or February.
When certainly.
Also
that.
Yeah. And
so what was the problem? Do you know?
It was the exhaust fan. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I missed that part. I'm sorry.
Well, that's all right. It's not the most important part of the story.
I was curious.
It was the exhaust fan. And so now, and the furnace is about 10 years old. And so now I know that if this happens in 10 years, it's the exhaust fan. Mm. I will only remember that if I listen to this podcast in 10 years.
I mean, the transmission's probably going to go before then.
Right? Probably.
Timing belt, actually.
Yeah, that one.
Make sure you top off the blinker fluid.
Yep.
Yeah. it's always the problem, blinker fluid. So yeah, that was my weekend. There you go.
I mean, that's definitely a weekend.
Outside of your furnace issues.
Yeah.
What else have you been up to? What have you been doing in the past year since we've had you on last?
Yeah, I think the last time we was on.
Not that far.
It was probably before Die Laughing last year. I feel like that's likely.
You just made Jenna very sad.
I'm sorry.
Other people.
Yes, all of us are sad about that laughing. It's been, I don't know if y'all knew this, but this year's been kind of challenging.
Hmm. What?
Yeah.
Say how.
Yeah, there's been, a pandemic going on. And I live with somebody who's high risk. Pat is high risk. Mm-hmm. Our job, which was delivering Asian food for a local Chinese food pseudo Chinese food, but whatever company, we both got laid off or furloughed or however you want to call it, because you know nobody was delivering. We deliver food for corporate clients, right? So it's like groups of 20 to 100 people. That just wasn't happening. That wasn't happening. Yeah. So we both got laid off. Our jobs have come back very slowly in about the last month and a half. So as opposed to working 5 days a week, I've been working about 1 day a week. And I was a freelance entertainer and performer and making almost a living that way. And now there's no theater.
There's no lamp for free.
Except for online, which we've managed. We have Vilification Tennis, something you all are familiar with, either as former performers or current performers.
Never heard of it. We
actually figured out how to do online shows, so that was online. Doing shit online is what I've been doing. I mean, mm-hmm. it's mm-hmm. what there is, right? You know, I've spent more time on Zoom than I watched Zoom when I was a kid. and I watched a lot of Zoom. I did.
Yeah.
Every important milestone get missed. You know, the convergence got missed, and Die Laughing got missed, and the Fringe got missed, and the State Fair got missed, and the Renaissance Festival got missed. We did do a couple of days out of the Renaissance Festival. That was mm-hmm. actually shockingly pleasant.
Oh,
they did a food parade, which was dumb. I can say that here, right? I'm not going to get it. We're not going to get in trouble with festival management if we say it was dumb, right?
No guarantees.
Mr. Peter Pan, we got a report here.
Yeah, whatever. Okay, so y'all know that the Minnesota State Fair did something called the State Fair Food Parade, because food is a big thing at the State Fair. And so they did this thing where you could pay $20 and then you would drive through the State Fair and be able to buy food from 15 different vendors, most of whom mm-hmm. are pretty popular, well-known vendors. Mm-hmm. We did this a couple of times because the State Fair is really a big attraction in our home. We enjoy it a lot. We only live a mile away from the State Fairgrounds, so we typically go. I mean, the State Fair runs 12 days, and probably at least one member of our household is there for 10 of them. We go a lot. So the State Fair being gone was a real disappointment, but at least we could get some of the State Fair food. And it was, I have to say that the hardest thing about it is, while I enjoy State Fair food, I don't enjoy it all at once. And the State Fair food parade involves driving through this gauntlet of food vendors over the course of about an hour and a half. And let me tell you, by the time you get to the end of it,
you're done.
You never want to see food again. no matter how happy any of that food made mm-hmm. you just the concept of eating again doesn't make sense.
Yeah. So,
They did the State Fair Food Parade. And around the same time, the Renaissance Festival kept saying that they were going to open because they were outdoors and they could still make it happen. And eventually they had to say that they weren't going to open. And they said that right around the middle of the State Fair Food Parade. And lo and behold, like a week later, they said, hey, we're doing a Renaissance Food Parade.
We just got a great idea, guys.
Yeah, interesting.
But we won't say from where.
If you read the press release for the Minnesota Renaissance Festival's food parade and had read the press release for the Minnesota State Fair food parade, you would find a great many words in common. In fact, about the only thing that wasn't in common is that the State Fair food parade had something called State Fair Bingo, and the Minnesota Renaissance Festival food parade had something called Festival Find It, which...
Completely different, guys.
Verify with people later was, in fact, bingo. So, so anyway, it's clear that they and it's dumb, right? Because we've all worked out of the Renaissance Festival for a long time, and we know that of all the people going out to the Renaissance Festival, about 10 of them are going there for the food. If food is not the primary attraction.
No.
At the Minnesota Renaissance. It's there. People eat.
It's there as a necessity because you're there during lunchtime.
hey, turkey legs. Come on.
People go for turkey legs because...
They do.
I don't know because they do.
I don't understand it either.
But mostly they go for the beer.
But you couldn't get beer on a drive-through experience. That wasn't going to happen.
Right.
So they decide they're going to do this festival food drive-through, which on its surface is like, do you not understand why people come to this festival?
No, of course not. No,
they don't. They put out the word to like crafters. They're like, hey, if you'd like to come out and sell some of your wares, please do that, was kind of the way they put it. Would you mind coming out and selling some of your shit? And entertainers, they said, hey, we don't have any money to pay entertainers, which is what
we're used to.
Yeah,
it's what we're used to, but it's also one of the reasons people come to the Renaissance Festival other than food. Anyway, so they're like, okay, entertainers, we'd like to offer you either you can come out, and if you have merchandise, you can sell your merchandise and keep very generously 100% of the profits.
Ooh, that is better than normal, right?
Or you can come out to the festival and you can help sell festival t-shirts and mugs, and we will pay you either $75 for the day, or you can have 25% of the profits from the sale of these mugs and t-shirts, whichever is greater. And so,
which is actually kind of a, I mean,
I'm in the red just thinking about that now.
Yeah, it's The interesting thing is when we called and offered this, the thing that I could not get a really clear answer on was, what exactly is the amount of profit on a t-shirt or a mug, so that I have some idea how many of them I would need to sell to make money. Now, I will say that apparently the mugs were great. They had plague doctor masks on them, and they were and people enjoyed them, and maybe they sold a lot. But we were like, okay, so when we do the math, they're saying for two people to work out there for $75, the food parade runs 8 hours, and you probably have to be out there before it starts and after it ends. So what you're offering is less than minimum wage for us to be out there, unless we sell enough. And we're like, we don't want to do that. But, well, you know, we're in a band and we need to rehearse anyway, so why don't we go out and rehearse in front of cars of people? What the hell? And we can sell a few CDs and it'll be nice. And we went out and we found a spot near the Mead booth on the festival site where the cars drove past, and it was in between areas that had food, so that meant that the cars weren't distracted. There wasn't really anything else happening there. And there was actually room for them to pull over, which they were not supposed to do. But when they did, we told them that we weren't going to tell them not to. So we played music for a couple hours, three times we were out there. And we actually did way better than we thought we were going to do. We were all like, well, if we can make the $10 in gas to drive out, we'll be happy. And we made a lot more than that. And that was
at least double that.
But I mean, the nice thing, and here's my thing about it's like, they didn't even fucking understand what makes the Renaissance Festival. Cause we're driving by and like one of the people who's there, they're like, it is so good to hear something.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, oh my God, you guys are great, even though they said that too, but they were like, it's just great to hear something. And I'm like, if this is me going, you know what, the people who are out there were happy in the sense that they got something, right? In the year of COVID, when everything is canceled and the Renaissance Festival isn't what it was, at least it was something. And I sympathize with that and I understand that, but I'm like, they spend so much time trying to get to the point where they could do the Renaissance Festival exactly as it is that they didn't spend any time going, how can we make a drive-through experience be what the Renaissance Festival is? How do we bring the sound of the Renaissance Festival to this experience?
I think the thing you're overlooking, Tim, is he doesn't give a shit.
What? I'm not overlooking that. I'm aware that that's the underlying problem.
Okay.
The underlying problem is that the owner of the festival said, I'm losing an ass ton of money this year. I therefore am going to figure out how to lose slightly less of an ass ton of money, but I'm going to spend zero time thinking about how to do it. I'm just going to tell my people at the last possible minute, this is what we're doing.
I am going to carbon copy the text from the state fair, change here's a couple some copy, words.
Yeah, here's some copy from the state fair.
Yeah. Do you can copy like my that. Homework, but change a few things so the teacher doesn't
yeah,
know.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But from a drag's perspective, from a performer perspective, from a psychological perspective of somebody who has not been in front of an audience.
Oh, shit.
For real.
In a year, since, yeah.
Since February, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. February, the amateur show for Vilification Tennis.
Okay.
Was basically the last time yep. that I was in front of an audience. And we were, the dregs were scheduled for two St. Patrick's Day shows, and the Monday before St. Patrick's Day is basically when we went into lockdown.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which I 100% agree with. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying,
absolutely.
This?
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was like, so that was it. That was our last opportunity to perform. And we went out to the festival grounds, and we performed music, and cars pulled over, and some of them stayed there for 3 and 4 and 5 songs. Some people actually gave us $5 for requests. And like I say, the money, it was, I mean, we all just wanted to break even, right?
Mm-hmm. So
just the opportunity. Oh, and the first day we were out there, one of our drag super fans paid the cabriolet drivers to pull them out there and set up a table socially distanced, a very long way away from us. But we had two people that were just watching our entire performance for 2 hours. That psychologically was super nice.
Yeah.
As idiotic as everything about that experience was for in the creation of it, the fact, mm-hmm. yeah, I have to be grateful that we were given an opportunity to do it,
mm-hmm.
That we were offered that chance, that we didn't have to pay anything, that all we had to do was, and they weren't like, and you must be out there X amount of hours or at X time or anything like that. Mm-hmm. They said, be out here whenever you want, find a spot somewhere on the route that's open, and do what you do for as long as you want to do it. And it was... it was very satisfying. And so that, no matter what else I can say negative, I can say that was a positive. But boy, I wish they'd figured out a way to make the sound of the festival happen, and it would have been so easy.
Well, I'm glad you had that opportunity. I got the $75 offer, and I asked a few questions about, you know, breaks and things like that, and wasn't very happy with the answers, and so I was like, nope.
Did you get an offer to come out and just do your stuff and sell your merchandise or anything?
Well, I don't have any physical merch, though, is the thing. All of my merch is online. I've been looking to get some physical merch, but just because I am solo hauling around merchandise.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I totally get that.
So... it was just like, I really didn't feel like going out there and trying to sell online merchandise while people are driving past me, because I really don't have enough. Like, with a song, you know, even if you come in the middle of a song, you can kind of, it's a great song, I can join. Like, with my act, you come in a couple minutes late, and you just like, okay, I don't know what's going on, and you just keep going.
And we encouraged people to buy CDs, like, put the CD in your CD player and crank it up.
Mm-hmm.
And now you've got a Renaissance festival experience that follows you around. That worked a couple of times, but, you know. I think, you know, if you couldn't sell anything, you know, at the same time, I will say that if you'd found some place to set up, people probably would have stopped.
I didn't, again, and I asked questions about that, because it sounded like there was a single file line and people just kind of had to keep moving, and I was... you know, even in the pitch when you know, the entertainment director was talking to me about it, and I could tell in his voice that he knew I was going to say no. Like, there was a result, like, I'm going through, I'm calling everyone. Just, like,
yeah, he said to me when he called, I want you to know that this is my job.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he kind of knew what was going to happen here, but he had a job to do. But like I said, I asked a few questions like about breaks and you know, just various other things, and a lot of I got a lot of I don't knows and unsatisfactory answers in my opinion. So and at this, and you know, I think Fondazzi also got, you know, an offer, and they were originally kind of thinking about doing it, but after after some of the same hang-ups that I had, they weren't getting answers to some of those questions. They were like, maybe not.
Well, and the thing is, so much, it pains me to say it, but so much ill will was built up by dragging it out as long as they did, you know, pushing and pushing and pushing to have it open in the more normal way. And I think not only would they have had a much better plan in place for what eventually happened, but I think that they also would have had a lot more...
I have thoughts about this.
...goodwill among the performers.
I have thoughts about this, and they're not going to be received well, and I don't think they should be received well.
Hmm.
But I'm going to express those thoughts now.
Mm-hmm.
I think that for as intelligent and cautious as many of the performers and participants of the Minnesota Renaissance Festival are in and of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I think that our patrons come in a variety of flavors, a variety of backgrounds, and a variety of perspectives. And I think that having paid attention to reactions that patrons were having, many of them were split, whether they should have been or shouldn't have been. I'm setting that aside. But the actuality is that there were many people that frequent the Minnesota Renaissance Festival that were so... We make such a good impression on them that they were just eager for the opportunity. And I think that from a purely marketing perspective, trying to... balance, and again, this is purely marketing. I'm not saying I agree with any of it, but from a marketing perspective, trying to balance the multitude of perspectives that a clientele has, I don't think that the message that they gave out to the participant or to the patrons was in any way harmful to them as a business.
Well, no, I think you're right. I think they said exactly what they were going to do, right? Said it's a festival food parade. You're going to drive through the festival. You're going to get a turkey leg and other food you didn't even know existed. That's what you're going to do. That is fair. But my artistic perspective is...
Oh, yes.
They could have created something... really amazing, for very little money and effort. That's the thing. It's like, you don't have to pay people a lot to get people to have gone out there. And you know,
people were making $0 up until that point. So,
right, and hell, you could have just talked to some bands and said, can we put some speakers up and play your music? We'll pay you $100.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wouldn't have had a problem with it, even if I hadn't been able to be out there and sell my music.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, can we just have some drag CDs and play them while people are driving through, so they've got Renaissance music playing while they're driving through? You bet. Down for it. Go for it.
Yeah.
And that's...
And I want to be clear, though. I think my point was more about the messaging running up to
Sure.
The changeover from, no, boy, howdy, guys, we're going to do this thing, and then suddenly food parade. and I'm not saying, and as a project manager, everything inside me is having a nervous breakdown. All of that. Let me be clear.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think, like, the project management aspect, the all of that, but mm-hmm. the messaging from a marketing perspective, I think, although I don't agree with it, was something that appealed to a larger audience than yes.
The early days, they had not sold out every spot, but by the end of it, they were selling it out. And that's why they extended it for 2 weekends. And my understanding is they did not sell out the final 2 weekends, especially the final weekend where the temperature was in the 40s both days.
Yeah.
And we didn't play out there the final weekend because it was just too damn cold. But I mean, again, there were a lot of people who clearly were happy.
Yeah. So, which is great. Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, that's what we want, is happy people.
Indeed. Yeah. We're going to take another break, and we'll come back, and you know what comes at that point.
Hey, everybody. You should like us on Facebook, apropos of nothing. You could follow us on Twitter, at AON Podcast, or you could join our Steam group at AON Podcast. Search for Apropos of Nothing.
Ladies and gentlemen, Brandon Patton was kind enough to give us the music for this episode and every episode. You can see what he's up to at brandonpatton.com. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, but especially you can help us out by rating our show. Check out our merch. You can go to society6.com/AON podcast.
Yeah, but it's so much more pleasant to talk about depressing things that are in the past than it is depressing things that are happening now.
And we're back. I'm Salsa.
James, you monster.
I'm Jenna. Goddamn.
Who are you?
And I'm Jim.
There we go. And we should do a Fast Five.
Great. Yes, good. Fast Five.
You were never really fast.
Our not as fast as we might like.
Today's Fast Five comes to us from Mud.
Yay, Mud!
Yay, Mud!
Yay, Mud!
All right, there is no context on this. We just go straight into it. Question number one.
Jesus.
Felicia Day or Allison Hannigan?
Felicia Day.
Ooh. Oh. But Allison Hannigan.
I gotta go Felicia Day.
Felicia Day is one of those people that, like, I as a bisexual look at, and I both would love to look like her in her life, and also I just would like to spend time with her intimately.
Mm-hmm. Say it slowly. Yeah.
That's for Felicia and I.
No. Yep. That's fair.
Yeah.
Allison Hannigan is just amazing, and I'm becoming better acquainted with her work because Bryn and I are watching Buffy, but for my first time. But I have to go with Felicia Day because she is the latest in the long line of mad scientists for Mystery Science Theater.
Hmm.
Okay, I just thought of a thing. What if the context is, which one does Jenna look more like? At which point I would have to go with Allison Hannigan because I have been told repeatedly and many times over the course of my lifetime that she and I look an awful lot alike.
You're thinking ahead. You can't. You got to wait for the context before you.
No. We can always.
We can conjecture all we want.
I'm saying Allison Hannigan because nobody else is voting for her, and she's awesome.
Jenna literally just did.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But you. She was starting with Felicia Day.
No, but, and I think I'm still going to go Felicia Day.
Oh,
okay. If the context ends up being,
I see,
which one does Jenna look more like? I've been
you're preempting that change.
I've been compared to Felicia Day like once, whereas Allison L like 17 million times over the course of my life.
Yeah, fair.
So
that's fair, but I still am going Allison Hannigan.
Okay.
Because nobody else is liking her and poor Allison.
Fair.
Fair. Yeah.
All right. Question number two. Spike or Angel?
Okay.
Angel. Mm.
This might be an all Whedonverse thing.
It could
seem
be
that way.
It might
because
be.
Felicia Day was in Dr. Horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, like, I'm aware.
I don't get the Spike love. I really don't.
I don't either.
Like, I like Angel a lot, but Spike, I guess Spike just irritated me.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think Angel was whiny in one way and Spike was whiny in another.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong.
I think Angel is whiny in a way that is preferable to Spike's whininess.
No, they're both annoying to me.
Yeah.
I feel like Spike had more fun storyline.
I think David Boreanaz is more attractive.
I agree with that completely.
Mm.
I'm going with Spike because Spike Lee's a better director than whoever the hell Angel is.
Also, the theme song to the Angel spinoff was pretty great.
Mm.
I could not get into the Angel spinoff in any way.
I'm not saying the show.
They had a
the
puppet
show.
Episode.
Just, like the cello intro music.
I can't get into Joss Whedon at all, so this is all like whatever to me.
Fair, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Okay. Question number three. Firefly.
Yes.
Or Buffy.
Right. God damn it.
Maybe this might be a question of like, is it better to be canceled before your time or to end after your time?
End at the height.
Because Buffy went a little too far.
Buffy went a little too long.
Yeah.
I'm
going Firefly.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, son of a bitch. Here's... Okay.
It's one of the reasons that I love Cowboy Bebop.
We're not talking about Cowboy Bebop.
No, but it's for timing.
Sure, but
also Space Cowboy.
God, this is going to drive me insane. Here's the thing, is that Buffy the Vampire Slayer was very influential in me deciding that I wanted to learn stage combat.
Ooh.
Like, very much so, and almost especially allowing for a feminine person to remain feminine while still being a badass, which is exceptionally important to me.
Mm-hmm.
But Firefly is better. It just is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Buffy was so very developmentally important to me, but Firefly is definitely just a better goddamn show. Even though it was short, it was good. Angry. I'm going to Firefly, but I'm not happy about it.
All right.
Fair.
Based entirely on the fact that every episode of Buffy I've ever watched, my response was, yeah, that was a pretty good episode, and I had no desire to watch another one, and I actually did watch all of Firefly. I'm going to have to go with Firefly.
All right.
Those are very different time commitments as well.
Indeed. Yeah.
They are.
Question number four. Christy Swanson or Sarah Michelle Gellar?
Remind me, Christy Swanson
was in the movie version.
Oh, okay.
I really liked the movie version of Buffy.
I also
know that, like, they definitely made her more of a, you know, the cheerleader, you know, especially at the beginning. But the Christy Swanson version has Paul Reubens.
Yeah, it does have Pee Wee Herman.
And that was
phenomenal. I actually was annoyed by his performance.
Really? I thought he was hilarious. Like, his death scene was fabulous.
Most of the movie except for him.
Huh, okay.
Like, there are a few bits and pieces here and there that I was like, eh, all right, that's cute. But, like, yeah, I did not actually enjoy his performance in that movie as much as everybody else seems to have.
But just even aside from that, I think I liked Christy Swanson's Buffy better than Sarah Michelle Gellar's Buffy.
Same. I'm agreeing with Salsa, and you know how much that pains me.
I think I have to go. I feel like there is a cloud cast on the Sarah Michelle Gellar one overall because of how dragged out the series became. Mm. Mm-hmm. But I do enjoy her portrayal more because I feel like they give her more intelligence. She's not smart, but she has more intelligence, if that makes sense.
They definitely gave her more intelligence, and I do gather, like I said, you know, this Christy Swanson version was a lot more, you know, but even before it got drug out, I felt like the Sarah Michelle Gellar version was a lot more soap opera-y and 90210-y.
That.
Well, I mean,
I'm trying to invest myself into that more as I'm watching more episodes, because originally I had no time or patience for example, Inuyasha, the anime, but found myself casually getting into it, and now I think it's pretty great. So it can happen if you watch enough of it, I'm sure, and now it's just a decision to do that. So I will probably end up liking Sarah Michelle Gellar's performance more and more as I see more episodes.
Well, and I will say that single mom time, watching the Buffy character have to deal with, sorry, spoilers, but raising her little sister, her surprise little sister, apparently.
Right.
And dealing with those very difficult adult things, like paying bills, when you're trying to work with a young person as well and not having the traditional structure behind you. There was a lot I connected with that.
Mm-hmm.
That's
makes sense.
Question number 5. Reboot or continuation?
For a second I thought it might be about Reboot the cartoon and just be like Left Turn.
No.
Firefly. This might be a Firefly question.
A Firefly thing.
Or it might be a Dr. Horrible thing. Tim, you've seen Dr. Horrible, correct?
Oh, yeah. Yep,
okay.
I feel like enough time has gone by that a continuation... Well, unless the continuation was a Legend of Korra where it's a Next Generation thing.
Right. I feel like a Next Generation continuation would be funny.
Firefly, TNG.
Yes.
If you're talking about Firefly...
No, I don't want a reboot.
I don't want to reboot either.
If you're talking about Firefly, too many people are invested in the people who played those roles.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's far too soon to try and recast those roles.
Yeah. Yeah.
So a continuation, either with the same actors playing those roles or with, as mentioned, something that's further in the future, I think would be a much better choice. It's sort of that question of, is Star Trek The Next Generation a continuation?
It is.
So Firefly, The Next Generation, I'm down for.
I honestly, based on the other questions, I think it's probably going to be a Buffy question, though.
Oh.
I think it's going to be, is it going to be a Buffy reboot or continuation?
Buffy the Vampire Slayer, The Next Generation? Sure.
Except that they really can't do that with the way that they ended everything.
Like, I feel like with Buffy, you need to do a reboot.
Storytelling. It'd be very interesting storytelling to get into a continuation with the way that Buffy ended.
Yeah, I think there's too much history gives you a lot of baggage and limits what you can do with a story because you have to keep it canon. Whereas with a reboot, mm-hmm. you can really create your own story and go in left and directions.
Well, that's...
I'm going to be specific. Like, I feel like the very specifically how they handled the way that Slayers work in the Buffy universe would make it very difficult to have a continuation. It's not really about, you know, who played what or whatever. Like, just the storyline for Buffy really just kind of went, and we are done.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's right. That's what I mean. There's the baggage there of the past canon, that how do you continue that story while not retroactively changing things, whereas a reboot, you can just say, fuck it, none of that happened, we're starting over. So I think
it also gives you the ability to remake it in a less problematic contemporary fashion. But I would say that a reboot would also be good for Firefly if, for example, you miss characters that have ended their timelines.
Unless it's a gritty reboot, in which case, fuck that shit.
No. Yeah, no.
No, I'm with Tim as far as Firefly, and I'm with Salsa as far as Buffy.
What about a gritty continuation?
Still no.
Well, that's the worst of both worlds.
Yeah. I want a gritty continuation of Dr. Horrible's sing-along.
Oh, there you go.
That, wow, yeah.
Yeah. Right.
So we open up the second email, and we see...
Pretty bad horse.
It says, question number one, Felicia Day or Allison Hannigan? Ooh. Which actress would you like to have as an AON guest if you could?
Shit. Well, I think Jenna answered that question.
All of the above, but
I know,
yeah.
Right? That's a tough fucking choice.
Fuck.
I'm going to stick with my answer for no reason other than it was something I already said, and so that's the tiebreaker.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I'm going Felicia Day because I have questions.
Off-air questions.
Off-air questions. I have on-air questions. Oops. I have air questions. I have air quotes.
Jenna has a drool bucket.
I am a little concerned if we had Felicia Day on the podcast that I wouldn't be able to say anything. I honestly, though, okay, taking a step back, though, Allison got to play one of the first openly lesbian characters.
Yeah, wow, yeah.
And there is a lot that I would want to question as far as how that worked for her, what difficulties she had, were there different expectations, whatever. Like, I do have a lot more, I feel like I would be able to have more of a conversation with Allison, whereas Felicia, I'm pretty sure I would just drool and stare.
Fair.
So yeah, all of the above, but...
All right.
Allison Hannigan is on Penn and Teller's Fool Us, and I'd really like to find out how that experience is. So I'm going with Allison.
Yeah, that's a very good.
That would also be good.
Good call out there. All right. Question number two: Spike or Angel? Who would you date out of Buffy's exes?
Yep. Okay. Yeah.
I'd go with Angel.
Angel.
Yeah. Spike just bugs me.
No. I mean, they're both toxic and gross, completely aside from the whole vampire thing.
Very different ways.
Like,
Angel is almost incel levels of toxic, which is...
Yes.
Yeah, they're like opposite kinds of toxic.
But, and here's where my argument falls, Spike has an accent. So...
You're correct. The accent plays it.
All right. Well, and also there's no mystery about who he is, or, you know, what he is, or how he is.
With Spike, I could borrow his coat and that fucking duster.
There you go.
What? Mm. Oh,
these are good choices.
Spike shows more ability to change than Angel.
That is a good call out. All right. Question number
mostly it's the accent. I want to be really clear about that.
Accent. It's pretty much the accent, yeah.
But it's the wrong. It's a British accent. Now, if it was an Irish accent, that would do me.
I bet he can do an Irish accent. Just ask him.
Yeah, but then he's putting one on, and it's just
Question number three: Firefly or Buffy? Which Whedonverse would you prefer to live in?
Firefly, of course. Firefly spaceships.
Yeah, but Reavers.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But the chance of encountering a spaceship, show notwithstanding, are pretty small versus the chances of occupying a part of the planet where there is a Hellmouth. Just like, as far as economy of spatial distribution.
What if you're in the
Buffyverse to live in Paris? Ooh.
It's happening, but not to you.
Yeah.
Get your baguette every morning not knowing the world nearly ended last night.
Yeah, Buffy
you're choosing to have that instead of having spaceships.
There is the spaceship argument, and there's also just... See, but... Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I'm overloaded. Yes, all of the above.
I think I'll just go with Firefly, and yeah.
I think I'm leaning Firefly, but
I'm going with Buffyverse in Paris.
Okay,
that's fair. Question number four: Christy Swanson or Sarah Michelle Gellar? Who was the superior Buffy?
Well, there we go.
Yeah. We called this one.
Yeah. Sticking with our answers, I think. Number five, reboot or continuation. Yep, I think we called this one too. If Buffy the Vampire Slayer was to come back to the small screen, specifically the small screen, would you prefer a reboot of the series or to pick up with an older and wiser Buffy?
Yeah.
So it's not even another generation. It's Buffy. And in which, yeah, I'd still go with...
Reboot.
Yeah, reboot.
Yeah.
I just don't want to change my mind. I still haven't watched the series, so I say continuation. There's just more for me to not care about.
All right.
If it's a reboot, I might like it. I mean, whatever.
Now that's tough but fair.
All right. Well, thank you so much to Mud for sending in the Fast Five. If you would like to send in a Fast Five, to send two emails to salsa@aonpodcast.com. The first one should contain nothing but the choices, and the second one, repeat those choices, and then give us context. Who has a shout-out?
I have a shout-out.
Shout it out.
I have a shout-out to Bryn, who has been a wonderful not roommate. she's been super supportive of everything going on with house stuff, even though she's not there anymore, but she's still kind of still technically there. And she's been very, very good with helping with my anxieties in various states, and I know that on top of all of that, she's still dealing with school bullshit. So, you know, shout out to her.
Anyone else?
Hey, shout out to Blue Sun Soda for opening another store.
Yes, that's right. Yay!
No, good call. I stopped there a couple weeks ago after my son had tennis practice, and I was very pleased to get my stuff without having to drive 45 minutes.
Only like 15, right?
It's actually like 10 minutes from my house.
I was about to say, it's real close to you.
Yeah.
So. I would like to say a shout out to my company, the place where I work, for being really good to their employees, and especially, I did physical therapy earlier today, and I've been doing remote physical therapy with a kit that they sent, and I'm starting to feel better and stronger. And it's really tough, but I didn't have to pay for it because my company cares enough about me. And just like, if I think back to the behavior of other employees, other employers, it is a pretty stark difference to have, at least in my career history, to have an employer that cares that much about me.
Cool.
I'm going to give my shout out to my wife. Yes, I know it's gross, but we've been married for 11 years,
aww,
and she still breaks up with me for some fucking reason. And
I've heard that's the steel anniversary.
Yeah, I thought it was the video game anniversary, but anyway, she's pretty awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anybody got something to plug?
Yes. Tim?
Oh. Me. I thought you were going first. Vilification Tennis is doing a show this Friday night. I think this goes up before then. Friday the 30th, the Vilification Tennis is coming from inside your house. It's a show that will happen online. Just go to Facebook Live or YouTube or Twitch, and you can find Vilification Tennis there. Also, I do my own podcast. It's called Geeks Without God. I do it with myself and Molly and Nick Glover, three people who are atheists and comedians and nerds, and we talk about one or sometimes all of those things each week. So,
all right,
if you're down with that, do it.
Anyone else?
I mean, I don't think this is going to go up before the show, but I'm doing a show on Tuesday, which is either today or yesterday, depending on when you're hearing this. So, if you're hearing this on Tuesday before 7 o'clock, we're doing I'm doing a story slam. Story slam with Strike Theater Online, because that's where theater is happening now, is online. The theme of the slam is dress up. If you want to hear me talk about some very nerdy cosplay related information, that'll be fun. So 7 o'clock, go to the Strike Theater Facebook page. I believe it'll be live streaming there. The invite we posted last week, but I can definitely give it to Salsa again to post again in case this goes up, or so you can feel bad that you missed it either way. That's what I am doing.
Nice.
Yay.
Neat.
All right. I don't have anything. So any last thoughts?
Bye, bye. I love you. Bye, bye, bye.
All right.
That was an accent.
Thank you so very much to everybody who has listened to this podcast. Again, thank you to Mud for sending in the Fast Five. On behalf of myself and James and Jenna,
Thank you to Tim.
Whatever.
Also, thank you to Tim.
Screw him. He's old. He's going to die soon.
Sorry, I got into my groove. Thank you to Tim.
I'm not a guest, but
thank you all for having me. I appreciate it.
Maybe I'll be able to get.
It was lovely to have you here.
Thank you to Tim for being here. On behalf of myself and James and Jenna, eat the fucking cake.
Come here, my rubber orangutan. Let me feel your nipples.